ASDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Good morning and welcome to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Since being founded in 1962, the Blood Bank of Alaska has been helping to save Alaskan lives. They now collect over 24,000 units of blood a year. Just one donation can save up to three lives. Currently, there is a critical shortage in Alaska for type O negative and type O positive blood. If every eligible donor gave blood just twice a year, we would not have any shortages. Are you eligible to donate blood? What should you know before a blood donation? Joining us today to discuss all the aspects of blood donation is Robert Scanlon, the CEO of the Blood Bank of Alaska. If you have a question or a comment about blood donation, please give us a call, toll-free, statewide, at 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. I want to also remind our listeners that this program will be available on demand through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Well, Dr. Bob Scanlon, Bob, welcome back to Line One. We had you on the show about 4 years ago, and I'm really happy to have you back.
Thank you.
So let's remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and your position and how you came to be involved with the Blood Bank of Alaska.
Thank you, Doctor. And it is a pleasure to be back, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with your listeners. So my name is Bob Scanlon, CEO of Blood Bank of Alaska, and I came to Alaska in 2012. I've been the CEO since that time. A little short story. My first exposure to Alaska was in 1987. I was a young, tender second lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps, and we flew through the Anchorage Airport on our way to Okinawa, and wandered through the airport, got a chance to wander a little bit outside the airport, fell in love with Alaska at that time, and made a personal promise to myself that someday I would come to Alaska to live. And sure enough, in 2012, I got my wish, and I've loved life ever since. It's a real pleasure to be up here. The privilege is mine to manage Blood Bank of Alaska. We have a lot of great people. Oversight is provided by a board of volunteer donors who have representation. We have representation from across the state, all the different communities. Blood Bank of Alaska, as stated earlier, was founded in 62. We were licensed by the Food and Drug Administration at that time. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Our sole mission is to provide blood and blood products to the state of Alaska in the quantities necessary. So based on what we call 21 CFR, which is the Code of Federal Regulations, which is federal law, we are required to provide a safe, pure, potent blood supply, which is similar to what a drug company would have to provide, because blood is a drug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for your service, first of all. You know, the Marines, that's quite interesting there. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I was Air Force.
Yes.
And so that's what brought me to Alaska, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are brought up here by the military.
Oh, they are.
We are pleased to have you as part of our community. Let's talk a little bit about the history of the Blood Bank. Founded in 1962, and you took over in 2012.
Yes.
I know you guys, I was there at the opening, but the new building that you're in, mm-hmm. when was that christened?
2014,
okay.
And the construction of that building, the project actually started in 2008, which was prior to my arrival here. A lot of that had to do with Mount Redoubt, the eruption. We came within, I don't know, maybe a day of running out of product at that time. And it was at that time that the board made the decision that we needed we need self-sufficiency. And then, of course, we were fortunate enough that Governor Parnell also believed in self-sufficiency, not just in blood banking, but, you know, with food and all that other kind of stuff. But So we were able to seek support and eventually receive support from the state to construct our new building.
Yeah, it's a beautiful facility. So let's take a step back into 1962. What was the first few decades of the blood bank like? Where was it, and what was it doing then? And sort of let's talk about the evolution of it.
Sure. So we started out small, as you could imagine. Our first staff member was a gentleman by the name of Charlie King. He's 93. He makes a financial donation to the blood bank every year, and in his letter, he always gives me tips on running the blood bank better. great guy, really great sense of humor. Charlie was the one that really kind of started the ball rolling under the auspices of Dr. Mike Burns. He basically was able to salvage two blood units from Providence that were not used in a surgery. Put them in a refrigerator, and Blood Bank of Alaska was born.
Hmm.
And in that first year, we had two beds, one staff member. We drew 682 units of blood that first year, and then we moved forward, and we are where we are now, 24,000 units. Prior to the pandemic, we were actually approaching 30,000 units. We're rebuilding again. It's rebuilding very quickly.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of questions about blood donation. But that raises one of them is the testing has evolved over the years. And so back in the 60s and then mm-hmm. in the 80s, there was the whole HIV mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Hepatitis mm-hmm. Sort of things. And in my understanding, that's all tested for now, and the chance of anything like that is so extraordinarily small.
It is, Doctor. You know, if I may go back a little bit, before the Blood Bank of Alaska, in Alaska we depended on something called a walking blood bank. And I don't know, I know you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, military.
But maybe a lot of the listeners are not. And what that consisted of was the hospital or clinic in the communities would have a Rolodex of community members, mm-hmm. Their contact information and their blood type. And if a blood transfusion was needed on a moment's notice, they'd give a phone call or jump on the snow machine, go grab them, bring them in. But and of course, back then, before the blood bank, though FDA had the auspices of blood banks as far as oversight and licensure, the testing protocols were not as stringent as they are now. I mean, they tested for some, things like syphilis and that kind of thing, hepatitis, but they didn't really go into depth like a lot of the stuff that we do now, like mm-hmm. West Nile virus and all that kind of stuff. But so that was not satisfactory. That's really, yeah. So when the Blood Bank of Alaska was born, it really provided kind of a birth of, for lack of a better term, but a birth of all sorts of other hospital procedures that could follow on with a standard with a stable blood supply that maybe you weren't able to do before.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. The walking blood donation, that was whole blood donation.
It was
right?
Whole blood.
So it was straight from the arm.
It was. And of course, back then they collected blood in glass jars.
Wow.
Now, of course, we have special plastic bags with special preservatives in them to nourish the red cells. As time has marched on, so too have the testing protocols. And in the early 90s, we could no longer do the testing because our old facility on Laurel Street, which we moved into in 1980, prior to that we were downtown in a very small building, had a couple of beds in a back room with a couple of refrigerators, Jewett refrigerators that they could store the blood in. And then in the 80s, we moved to the Laurel Street location. We were able to we ended up having to give up donor testing because the protocols just got to be very onerous, very restrictive, but also pretty vast in what you were now testing for.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up having to outsource it, and we currently send our testing to Minneapolis, Minnesota, to a place called Memorial Blood Centers. And it's a donor testing center. There's about six donor testing centers across the country. run by various organizations. Donor testing, though it used to be in different blood regions, has now been consolidated because it's very expensive and it's very labor intensive. So we chose Minneapolis because we have a direct flight to Minneapolis from Anchorage. And that worked for a while, but you know, we're kind of slaves to the airline schedules and to...
So they're flying commercial.
Oh, they are.
And do you have to send the entire unit or the entire blood sample, or do you just take a small sample of it to send?
So what we do is we send, you know, five tubes. So we send just the tubes. The units, the actual physical units, stay here in Anchorage. It works, but it doesn't work. So, for instance, during the riots, there was a real unease about the stability of testing. A couple of years ago, we had the what they call the blizzard bomb in Minneapolis. So there were 8 days where we couldn't even send tubes to them. And now, most recently, the Memorial Blood Center had a ransom hack, which they're still trying to recover from, and it happened 3 weeks ago. It was a pretty bad one. And so that's forced us to enter a lot of the data manually that we would otherwise have digitally sent to them.
Right.
So this donor testing lab is coming online just in time. Because our thought is it's only going to get to be more and more difficult to have good flight schedules. Labor's an issue in the lower 48 everywhere. The labor pool is just changing, and so, but you know, there's something to be said about having self-sufficiency.
Absolutely. Let me interrupt you there just for a minute. I want to give our listeners a chance to call in if they have questions. A reminder, our call lines are 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. That's 907-550-8433, or you can email me at line1@alaskapublic.org. So, Bob, to piggyback off of this, you have to send the blood or a sample of the blood to Minneapolis currently to get tested. Now, blood's on a clock, right?
It is. It is.
And so we can talk about that in a little bit, but there is a finite period of time where that blood is usable.
Yes, yes.
And so delays in testing could be really important.
It is. We have the clock starts ticking from the moment that blood goes into the bag or into the tube. We have to get it tested within a certain timeline. And then once we get the test results, we only have 42 days. To get that blood transfused, and that's if it's red blood cells. If it's a platelet, we only have 5 days. And of course, it's as soon as we draw it, the ticker starts. So in reality, we maybe have 3 days by the time we get it back. Now we're going to be moving towards 7-day platelets. We're a little bit behind the power curve on that. Nationally, the standard now is 7-day platelets. We have been moving in that direction, but we've had so many other projects that we've been doing. And plus, you know, due to the labor issues as far as getting qualified staff, which we now have, and we're real blessed with the folks we have. They're just fantastic. So we're going to be moving towards that. We're also going to be moving towards going to whole blood, which I know you'll probably want to ask about at some point. But the clock starts ticking. And once we have the donor testing lab set up, it's going to provide us a lot of versatility that we don't have now, and it's going to allow us to be able to respond more cost-effectively for routine needs. But this is the most important thing. Because we are a important element of the emergency response system, we're recognized as a first responder. If there's a disaster, we will be able to take the influx of blood that results from that and have it tested immediately and have it ready that day, as opposed to having to send the tubes off and waiting 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah, that's just critical. Yeah. So what's in the final stages now is you doing all of your own blood testing here in Anchorage.
Yes.
So blood donations from outside of Anchorage areas, such as Fairbanks or something, would those come down here for testing, or will you be able to test everywhere?
No. Our central location is here in Anchorage. That's just simply because the airport's here.
Mm-hmm.
So what will happen is the blood and the tubes come to Anchorage. We get those all processed, and then what we do is we push the finished units back out to those communities. That's what we found to be the most efficient and cost effective.
Yeah. Well, Bob, tell us some of the reasons why someone would require or need a blood transfusion.
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of folks think that it's just strictly based on traumas, and traumas do play a role. And I have a fact here, like, for instance, it's probably about, I don't know, 8-9% trauma, but you know,
that's smaller than I would have thought.
Yeah. But the majority of the blood is used for things like heart surgeries, delivering mothers that maybe have a complication. Cancer patients, burn victims, all that kind of neat stuff. So the blood is used on a daily basis on a routine basis. And if I can quantify it, doctor, when a donor donates blood, what they're doing is investing in their fellow Alaskan. They're allowing that Alaskan to maybe see their child graduate from high school, celebrate another birthday, see their first child. I mean, when you save a life, you don't know what that impact's going to be, because the child that you save today may be the physician that is helping you in your golden years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's really important that people keep in mind that it's not just about traumas. It's about just everyday use, routine use. And plus, blood has kind of an insurance value. I know you as a surgeon, you may have what we classify now as a bloodless surgery, but it's really nice to know that that unit of blood is on the shelf in case there's a complication or the unexpected
mm-hmm.
happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of any physicians that would move forward on a surgery if they knew that there wasn't any blood to back them up if they need it.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Bob. It's a good backup plan. It's a good insurance policy. We know as surgeons that if something does go bad, that we can get blood, mm-hmm. almost immediately, and blood products. Sometimes we even plan for it in advance when we suspect that there's going to be a challenging surgery. Or if we know somebody has issues with blood, or they can only accept certain types,
mm-hmm.
Or if they're on blood thinners, we know that the bleeding can be higher. So,
yep.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic to have that resource here. I want to go ahead and take a short mid-break here, and when we come back, we're going to discuss a little bit more about blood transfusion and what a donation looks like. You are listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. Or in the Anchorage area at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Do you have questions about blood transfusion? Do you know if you are eligible to donate blood? After this short break, we'll continue our discussion with Robert Scanlon, the CEO of the Blood Bank of Alaska.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Want to make a lasting impression? Consider planning a gift as a bequest to this station. Talk to a financial advisor to learn how.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by Robert Scanlon, CEO of the Blood Bank of Alaska. If you have a question or a comment, call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage at 907-550-8433. That's 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So, Bob, I have a question from Lori here on email, and she's in the Fairbanks area. And she says that about half the times she's tried to donate blood, her hemoglobin levels have been a little bit below the cutoff for donation. And is there any good ways for her to raise her iron levels or get above that for donating blood? Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any recommendations?
Well, we always recommend diet, taking a look at your diet. If it's chronic, and of course, I am not a physician, so I think you probably would be able to answer that question better than I can. I can make a recommendation as far as eating a good steak or, you know, broccoli or something,
Yeah, I think a high iron diet, supplementing iron orally. There's many different types of iron, and some are better absorbed than others. And also checking iron, and if you're iron deficient, also finding out why you're iron deficient. So it's not always a poor diet. It could be chronic small amounts of blood loss and things like that. Yeah. But what is the criteria for donation with hemoglobin, or is there a bottom level that you guys don't accept, obviously?
There is, I don't recall it right now.
But there, obviously, you can't take blood if your blood level is too low. So
yeah, we test the hemoglobin, the hematocrit. And if it is too low, then obviously so we're concerned with the end user, obviously the patient. Mm-hmm. That's very, very important. But we're also very concerned about the donor. You need to be a healthy donor. We don't, do no harm. We don't want to do anything to injure the donor. You're trying to do a good thing. You're trying to help your fellow Alaskan. And that's our mission, and you're participating in that mission. You're supporting that mission. Quite frankly, the blood bank belongs to every Alaskan. So you guys are our boss. So we gotta take care of the boss.
Absolutely. Well, Roger has a question here, and he says that he has to undergo phlebotomies periodically due to high levels of blood, and the blood is discarded. Mm-hmm. And he's asked about donating the blood to the Blood Bank of Alaska, but his doctors have told him that that's not possible. Mm-hmm. Also that he's on blood thinners. So mm-hmm. any comments for Roger there?
Sure. Well, the blood thinners would disqualify a donor. Mm-hmm. For obvious reasons. We have a number of donors. One of the things that we do as a community service is what's something called therapeutic donation. It's driven by physicians who write a prescription for that, because it is a treatment for a medical condition. Typically, when a donor presents with that condition, it's for one of two reasons. One is hematocritosis. The other is something that's becoming more and more of a standard treatment protocol, which is testosterone therapy. Mm. You need a special waiver from the Food and Drug Administration in order to be actually able to use blood from a hemocrematosis. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
But, and then, of course, the testosterone therapeutics we wouldn't use anyway, because mm-hmm. that is a treatment plan for a medical condition, and we've never really pursued that. Mm-hmm. We do charge a nominal fee for that service. It's well below the national average, and it's well below what you would be charged in a physician's office or at the hospital to do that. And again, we do it as a community service. Mm-hmm. We're for all intents and purposes, we're breaking even on it. That we want it to be sustainable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting on your website that I didn't realize that one out of every seven patients who are hospitalized end up needing blood.
Yes. Yes.
That's a very high number to me. It's important that we have the blood available for these patients that are in the hospital.
It is. Well, we always tell the donors, you know, the unit on the shelf is the unit can be used. You know, it's great that we have a donor base, and we're very, very appreciative to Alaskans who come in and donate. The intent to donate is different than actually having to donate and putting that unit on the shelf, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because when the need arises, it's the unit on the shelf. There's no substitute for blood. When blood is needed or a blood product is needed, there is no substitute.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So another stat that I was shocked at is that over the course of their lifetime, one in three Alaskans will need blood.
Yes. Yes. It's really mind-boggling. You know, people don't think about it because it's an old concept. You know, blood donation is an old concept. But blood donation is a basic building block of medical treatment. It's a foundational thing. It's not high speed, low drag. It's not complex in terms. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's not like, you know, there's nothing electronic or anything about mm-hmm. it, but like I said, there is no substitute for it.
Yeah.
There is no substitute for it.
Yeah. We have a call, from Larry, from Fairbanks. Larry, welcome to line one.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been an avid blood donator for over 20 years, and I think I've got more than 5 gallons of blood in the Alaska's bucket.
Thank you.
Because of a long time iron deficiency right now, I can't donate. So I encourage other folks to get out there. I really, really am glad to have the opportunity to help the community, but I'm missing it right now.
I bet. Well, hopefully you can get the iron levels worked out and get back to donating. And thank you for your call, Larry. Okay. And then, Bob, let's talk about what we get out of a blood donation. So if I go in, which I've done myself many times, blood donation, I'm an O positive, and I know there's a shortage of that mm-hmm. right now. So when I go in to give my donation, walk me through the process a little bit, and then what do you get from my blood, because I know it's separated into multiple different components.
It is. And Larry, thank you for being such an avid donor, and we miss you too. So when you're ready to come back, you come on back, and thank you. So thank you for the question, Doctor. So, you know, when I provide presentations to the community, one of the things that I compare blood banking to is the oil industry. You know, you drill for the oil, mm-hmm. you bring up the crude, you make it into styrofoam or gas or diesel or whatever. Well, we do the same thing with blood. We receive a whole blood from a donor, and we start to break it down. And so what we do, let's start at the beginning. So you come in, you present, we'll ask you for your identification to verify who you are, because we are going to be creating a donor record, which is comparable to a medical record. So we want to make sure you are who you say you are, because we are going to be putting data in there for you, because our hope is that you'll be a long-term donor. Mm-hmm. But we also need to do that because if there's something that needs investigation, like a test result or something, it's incumbent on us to be able to retrospectively look at that unit so that we can provide the test results to whoever is asking, mm-hmm. whether it's the FDA or whoever. So you present your ID. There is a donor health record that you will fill out, where we ask you some basic questions like, have you had surgery recently? Are you on any type of medications? We ask, you know, do you live with someone that has hepatitis?
Mm-hmm.
Have you traveled recently? Where did you travel to? That kind of thing. We're just trying to zero in on if there is any reason why you maybe needed to be deferred, whether it's a health issue that you may have that you don't know that you have. Or if you've been exposed to something like malaria, you know, if you go down to Cancun, you know, you might inadvertently be in a malaria area. So we need to check that out. If everything checks out, we'll take you to a donation chair. We'll give you some wonderful conversation as we gently place a needle in your arm, and we'll take your blood. And all in all, it's anywhere from a 45-minute to 60-minute transaction. After you donate, we'll take you into the canteen. You get juice and cookies. Throughout the donation process, of course, you have a really wonderful conversation. Mm-hmm. We enjoy our donors. And then from there, we'll ask you if you want to make another donation or not, or, you know, make another appointment.
Yeah.
But within 45 minutes to an hour, you're out the door, and you have provided that whole blood unit to us. From there, we'll take that unit. We'll send the tubes to Minneapolis for the donor testing. It's going to go through about anywhere from 11 to 13 different tests. And what we're checking for, again, is like West Nile virus, hepatitis, HIV, all the mm-hmm. you know. Once we get the test results back, if everything checks out, then we will label that unit. And by labeling it, we're putting our license number on it. We're also providing it with a donation, it's going to get a unique whole blood number. And we'll be looking at that whole blood number during the labeling process to make sure that we put the right blood type on it. From there, we'll process it, or we'll spin it down. We'll get red cells out of it. We'll get plasma from that unit, and then if we need to, we can get what's called a random donor platelet out of that unit. Typically, now we're getting two different products out of a unit of blood, and that's red cells and plasma.
Mm-hmm.
And the red cells will be filtered with what's called a leukoreduction filter to take the white cells out, and that lessens the likelihood of, say, like a graft versus host reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Transfusion reaction.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We'll put those on the shelf for distribution.
Yeah, so you can get packed red blood cells.
Yes.
Out of it. You can get plasma out of it, which has all the clotting factors mm-hmm. and all of that sort of stuff. And then we can also get platelets
yes.
separately as well. So Robin is also calling from Fairbanks. Robin, welcome to Line 1.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a crazy younger brother who, many years ago, was arrested for riding his bicycle on the New York State Thruway. And when he went to court, the judge gave him community service in the form of giving blood, since he had risked people on the highway. And I wonder whether Alaska had anything like that, or whether that was something to advocate for, or what.
That's a very interesting comment, Robin. Thank you for your call. So, Bob, some states will mandate people to donate blood for various things. Is that a thing that happens in Alaska, or should it be?
Well, I haven't seen it, and I wouldn't second guess the courts on that. probably not. You know, by law, federal law, we are not able to take a donor who isn't a volunteer donor. And that is because under federal law, we cannot produce a product that will be transfused into a patient by a paid donor. That donor would be under duress, obviously, by the court.
Mm-hmm.
So we probably wouldn't take that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's important to note that there are really good reasons not to pay people for, quote unquote, donating mm-hmm. or giving their blood. And there are paid donations for other types of bodily functions or things as well. But blood is not one of them. And And that's important, right, Bob? Because, you know, the questions that you ask someone, someone might not be fully truthful if they're getting financial gain out of it.
That is absolutely correct, Doctor. Again, our mantra is the safety, purity, and potency of the blood supply. And we want a willing donor to come in and donate for the right reasons. And we're looking at it from a safety aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, some wonderful questions here on email. I want to I'll bring up this one about platelets in Fairbanks. So does Fairbanks have a platelet donation machine, or is there plans to get one?
Fairbanks used to have an apheresis machine. The dream is to establish an apheresis machine there again one day. But because of the timeline, as far as the viability of a platelet, it didn't make sense to have an apheresis machine there. There's a temperature sensitivity issue as well for that unit, because a platelet, we want to keep a red cell at about 6 degrees Celsius, and the platelet needs to be much warmer than that, like room temperature. So it didn't make sense to have a apheresis machine there, and we don't want to draw a product that we're going to end up wasting.
Sure. So if someone donates blood in Fairbanks, that will come down to Anchorage.
It will.
And then if someone in Fairbanks needs platelets, it gets shipped up to Fairbanks for use.
It does.
Okay.
It
so
does.
It's just not stored in Fairbanks.
Correct.
But they have access to platelets.
Yeah. We'll send the platelets directly to the hospital. And we keep them well stocked for emergencies.
Yeah.
But as far as the Fairbanks collection site having platelets on hand or collecting platelets there, it just didn't make sense from a sustainability aspect.
Mm-hmm. Email from Julie. This is one that has a personal connection as well. She says that she was living in England in the 1980s. And she has not been able to give blood because of exposure to mad cow disease. I spent a few years in England in school as well, and was told at that time I couldn't donate blood. And it was about 10 years at that point. But she wants to know if there is still any issue with her exposure.
That's a wonderful question, and thank you for asking that question. So in the 80s, there developed a variant CJD known as mad cow. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of reasons why that developed, we'll get into, but the response by the Food and Drug Administration was to provide a deferral for that because there really wasn't a test for it. There still isn't, that I'm aware of. And they didn't know if it may manifest at a later point, which would contaminate the blood supply. So the good news is, recently, in the last year and a half, the Food and Drug Administration has liberalized that policy, that deferral. So my recommendation is military members, members of the oil community, if you lived in England or an area of Europe where you fell under that deferral, come on in. We'll go through a health history form with you. Mm-hmm. Chances are you are now eligible to donate, and we think it's great. We've brought quite a few people back into the donor pool, and even if you just want to be able to donate and you decide not to donate, that's fine too. We would like to clear the air in regards to that deferral, folks that have been deferred. Mm-hmm. So please feel free to give us a call so we can provide that service for you.
Okay, Julie, there you go. Get into the Blood Donation Center and see if you can donate. We're going to take our second break here. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us statewide, 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion with Robert Scanlon, the CEO of Blood Bank of Alaska.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News weekdays on your local public radio station.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by Robert Scanlon, CEO of the Blood Bank of Alaska. If you have a question or a comment, please call us statewide, 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Bob, we have a lot to get to in the last segment, so lots of questions here. One thing also I was shocked with doing my research for the show was that only about 36% of Alaskans are actually eligible to donate.
Yes.
So your quick comments on why that is.
Okay. So 37% of folks, as the doctor said, are eligible. The folks that are not eligible, just right off the top, are maybe folks that are too old to donate, too young to donate. Maybe they have a health issue that prevents them from donating. So basically, we have 36 to 37% of the population is considered healthy enough to donate.
Okay. And so then the other shocking statistic was that you take that 36% of Alaskans who are eligible, and only 2% of those actually donate blood.
Yes.
And so why is that so low?
Well, the number one complaint is people are afraid of needles.
Okay.
I get it. It's the elephant in the room, right? We all try to avoid, our skin being punctured, in our day-to-day life. But this is a controlled procedure. It's very comfortable. You're actually going to enjoy the process. I promise you, you're going to want to come back and do it again. You're treated like a king or a queen when you're there donating. I know you're a donor, doctor.
Yep.
And I think you can attest to that. We do a great job. Please.
Absolutely. I think it's a very comfortable environment.
Yep.
And,
yep.
The cookies are wonderful afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the perks.
Yep.
So what your job as CEO is to take that 36% and get as much percentage of those people to donate as possible.
And that's absolutely correct. And, Alaskans, I have a lot of gratitude for the 2% that come in. The state is essentially riding on the coattails of the 2% that come in and actually donate.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could put it in perspective, those folks who are thinking about donating or haven't donated, please understand that there is no special blood inventory here in the state. We all are dependent on the same inventory. I don't have a special inventory that I can tap into for my family and I, just like you don't. It's mm-hmm. it's a collaborative effort in preserving the state's healthcare system, that part of it. And so we encourage folks to just give it a try. I know for folks, it's some people are very sensitive to needles, and it's a big act of courage to do that, and we encourage that. We will support it, and you will have our sincere gratitude if you decide to come in and donate, which we do encourage.
Yeah, so that out of that 2% that donate, we can further break it down into the age groups of
yes.
people that donate.
Yep.
And so it's interesting. So age 40 to 60, which is where I fall, makes up about 40% of the donations. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the biggest piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then over 60 is about 23%. 25 to 39 is 27%. But then 24 and under is actually quite low at 12%.
At 12%.
And so two questions here. Jack is emailing. He's 72, And he wants to know if there's a hard stop in terms of the age in which you can no longer donate.
Not really. So you can begin donating at the age of 16 with a authorization letter from your parents, and of course you would need to be a healthy donor. As far as the other end of the spectrum, we will take donations up to 75 years old. And then at 75, the donor needs to bring a note from their physician that their health is able to support blood donation. We've had donors, in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So blood donation is available so long as you're healthy.
Okay, that's great, Jack. And Jack's second part of his question is that he has a common blood type, A positive, but was told he has a rare antigen. Can you please discuss any antigens that might impact donation abilities?
Well, no, not really. So an AB pos, that's about 3% of the population. So it is rare in terms of the overall spectrum of blood types. Your blood is very, very valuable, and especially for platelet donation.
Mm-hmm.
Because your blood type is rare, there are fewer folks that can actually use the red cell versus what they can do with your platelets. So we would encourage, is it Jack?
Jack.
Yeah. Jack, we would encourage you to consider platelet donation. We're all about platelets these days. They're used very, very heavily.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Another question, and I'll tweak it a little bit here. But Harold wants to know if what percentage of blood donations are intentionally destroyed, and why would that be? And I'll also add to that question, Bob, like what percentage of blood donations like expire or don't get used?
Right. So expired blood, that's about 4% of our total blood collections, which is a very low number.
That's really low.
It is
low.
Yeah,
I would have expected it to be much higher.
Yep. As far as destruction of blood through the process, you're probably looking at anywhere from another 5 to 8%. Otherwise, we work really hard to get the blood used.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a process where we will ship the blood out to all of the different hospital organizations. And of course, as the clock ticks, they start nearing expiration. And we will bring that blood back to the blood center, provide those hospitals with new blood, late dated blood, and the blood that's approaching expiration, we will go to our heaviest users. So, like for instance, a Providence, who works really well with us in ensuring usage of blood that's approaching its life,
mm-hmm.
end of life. Alaska Native does. I mean, all of the large hospitals, Alaska Regional, they all make a real point in helping the blood bank use every donation.
Yeah.
The name of the game is getting the blood used. Now, if they don't use something, say we have some O negs that haven't been used, and maybe they have maybe 3 or 4 days left on them, and they're not going to use them, we will then try to find a hospital or a blood bank somewhere in the country that could use those. And in the past, when we've surveyed our donors, we've asked them, do you want this blood to only be used in Alaska, or if it's late dated and it's about to expire, can we try to find a user someplace else? To the donor, they all say, I want the blood used, I want to save a life, so that's what we do. That shipping it out side of the state is very rare. We don't do that often enough. And the reason why is because the blood that we collect gets used. A lot of the hospitals have full census. They are using blood, gangbusters. So every unit that we collect gets used.
Awesome. Mike is calling in from Juneau. Mike, welcome to Line 1, your health connection.
Hey there. I used to give blood up until 1999. I got a diagnosis of idiopathic thrombocytopenia, which is low blood plate levels, but mm-hmm. they don't know why. I was told I couldn't donate after that. but from 2000 on, my platelet levels have been normal. I wonder if it's okay to donate or if I should steer away from that.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Bob, any thoughts on ITP or could he maybe donate other portions of his blood?
Potentially. I think what I would recommend, and again, I'm not a physician, so the recommendation would be that you talk to your physician in regards to your ability to donate. Chances are, if that was a formal diagnosis and the blood bank knows about it, you're probably going to need a note from your physician clearing you to donate. And then it's a matter of just coming in and going through the donor health record process to see that you are a healthy donor. And I'm very happy that your health disposition has gotten a lot better. Good for you.
And I would think that just because, as long as it's safe to donate, platelet levels high enough, that the other blood products would be fine to use. Yeah.
Yep.
So I have another question here about federal funding, and we have a call coming in, but email wants to know if there's any issues with the recent funding freeze from the federal government. And I will also take Leon, who's calling on line 5. Leon, welcome to line 1.
Hi. I was just wondering, I'm a blood donor. In fact, my wife and I donated yesterday. But I was trying to remember an article I read in ADN last year about Governor Dunleavy vetoing funding for the blood bank that would stop us having to send our blood out to Minneapolis to get it tested and then sent back up to Fairbanks. Can you comment on that?
Thank you, Leon. Yeah, Bob.
Sure. The first question as far as federal funding, that will not impact the blood bank. We do not receive federal funding.
Okay. You are state-funded and donations, or?
We actually, it's fee-for-service for us.
Okay.
So when we bill the hospitals directly, we do not bill them for the blood. The blood is a gift. And we cannot bill for something that we receive as a gift.
Okay.
When we bill, we are billing for things like the creation of a donor base, the management of the donor base, recruitment, a quality assurance program, processing the blood. The big cost is testing the blood, mm-hmm. And then distribution of the blood. So shipping costs, that kind of thing. So we do not bill for the blood per se. We're charging for the services that are required to make that a safe, pure, potent unit.
Yeah.
So that's
logistics.
Correct. It's all logistics. It's not the gift itself. As far as last year, the legislature and the governor signed off on the blood bank receiving approximately $1.5 million. So as many of our listeners know, the state and the governor, the various governors, have been very supportive of the blood bank over the years. For instance, our building that we are in now mostly was financed by the state of Alaska. So the citizens of Alaska, through their legislature and governors, provided the funding, $33 million, to build the building that we have. And it's built to critical infrastructure standards, and it was specifically constructed in order to house a donor testing lab so we would have self-sufficiency in the state. We have gone back to the state and we have asked for an additional $4 million to finance donor testing. And we were originally to receive $5 million back when the building was built, but when Governor Walker came in, obviously he and the legislature had to deal with the oil revenues falling, and it was cut out of the budget. And so we've gone back, we went back and asked, and we were provided, so right now we have, of that $4 million we've asked for, we have $2.5 million of that. There was $500,000 that wasn't provided to us that we will be going back and asking for that $500,000 as the capstone to the project so we can complete the project.
Yeah, well, from what you have described here, Bob, bringing testing in-house would just be a huge game changer in terms of logistics and the ability to further use the blood that we have. From a political standpoint, I think Alaskan saving Alaskan lives is kind of not a political issue, you know. Hopefully it's not as bad politically as I would think.
Yeah, no, you know, we haven't had any issues. I mean, regardless of which governor it is, whether it's Governor Parnell, Governor Walker, Governor Dunleavy, they're all very supportive of the blood bank. Each of the members of the legislature have been very, very supportive. And the citizens of the state of Alaska, we were talking earlier about the fact that I've been in management of blood banks for some time, started in the 90s, and there isn't anywhere in the country that compares to the support the Blood Bank of Alaska receives. I mean, it's incredible the support that we receive from our leaders, our political leaders, and members of the community across the state. It's phenomenal.
Well, Bob, we only have about two more minutes, and I wish I had time to get to all of these emails and calls. I do see a call that I will just ask here for Mary. Is she wants to know about donating in Ketchikan. Mm-hmm. So piggybacking on that as well with our last few minutes, you know, can people donate there, and how would people donate if they want to?
Sure. We make a real effort to ensure that the Blood Bank of Alaska is representative of Alaskans. We want to give everyone a chance to donate. We do send mobile operations down there. So we have six fixed sites across the state. We have two here in Anchorage. We have one in Fairbanks. We have one on the Kenai in Soldotna. We have Juneau. And then, of course, we have the Mat-Su Valley donation site. We also have mobile crew that work the road system in some of the rural communities, and then we also fly collection staff down to Ketchikan, Wrangell, you know, Sitka, wherever we need, Bethel, wherever we need to go to collect blood. So in answer to your question, we just the other day we were talking about coming to Ketchikan. We will be coming to Ketchikan, and we will make sure that that is heavily advertised so you are aware of when we will be there.
Great. All right. Thank you, Bob. We just have about another 40 seconds here. Just any closing thoughts for our listeners, or any website or phone number information?
Sure. I do want to correct something that I said earlier with the traumas. I was saying that it was about 8%. It's actually 12%.
Okay.
12%. That's probably why you're scratching your head. I need an error.
I think it's still low.
Yeah,
I think it's still low.
12%, it goes towards trauma. But if you'd like to donate, please give us a call at 907-222-5630. That's 907-222-5630. We'd be more than happy to make an appointment for you. We do take walk-ins, gratefully. And I want to extend my thanks to all Alaskans who have donated to the Blood Bank of Alaska. And for those of you thinking of donating, we highly encourage it, and thank you.
Okay, well, that's a great way to end our show. Special thank you to our guest for being with us today, Robert Scanlon, the CEO of Blood Bank of Alaska. Thanks to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. This program will be available on demand through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska, and donate some blood.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
This program was brought to you by Jim and Shirley Brown's Apartments, located in Sandpoint above Trident Seafoods and the Boat Harbor, featuring two-bedroom apartments on a month-to-month basis. For more information, call Jim Brown at 386-6050.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS 88.1 FM in Falls Pass and KKQA 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory through tonight. Today, northeast winds 25 knots,